Welcome to another episode of Systematic Geekology. This is a space where we seek to create and cultivate healthy conversations between those things we geek out on and the philosophical and theological questions that often arise out of our fandoms. Like, what does it mean to be human? What makes a hero? What makes a villain? How do the stories and narratives we geek out on shape how we live in the world? We are your priest to the geeks. We aren't all ordained, but we see ourselves as mediators at the intersection of geek culture and going deeper in our faith. We don't always have to agree, but we do respect each other, and we see everyone as a beloved child of God. Everyone geeks out on something, so come geek out with us and enjoy the show.
You're listening to an Anazal Ministries podcast.
Hello, geeks. What does it mean to be human? That's a question I hope that will never get old and that we'll never stop asking. I hope, but we'll see about that. And I can definitely say, as we're live here on YouTube, that I'm with some of my favorite humans, all-star humans. I would say they're all-star humans. And so we're going to wrestle with that question. What does it mean to be human through the lens of alien Earth? That's our main topic. But this is a What's New episode, and we will be talking about what we're geeking out on lately and the lightning round of things that are new in the culture that pops that we've been hanging out with and geeking out with over, I've had some time. I needed some time to catch up, and I finally caught up a little bit on pop culture. And we're going to share about that today. So welcome, friends. Welcome to Systematic Geekology. We are on YouTube. And so if you're listening in your earbuds, you're listening to the podcast, you can hop over and see our faces. You can see what humans are part of this roundtable over on YouTube. You know how YouTube works. You can like, you can subscribe, you can share with friends, you can chat in the comments, all those things. If you have to be watching live right now, chime in. We'll throw your comment up on the screen there and dialogue with you as we're a part of this. And so let's go around the horn. Who do we have here today? Introduce yourself, and then on a scale of 1 to 10, how human do you feel today? Evan, I'll let you go first.
So my name's Evan, and how human do I feel?
Yeah. Yeah.
More human than human, I guess.
Okay. So on a scale of 1 to 10, what's more human than human, you think?
6, Evan.
Seth, like, there you go. Cool. Jill, introduce yourself, and then let's get one in. How human are you feeling today?
Hi, Jill Elizabeth, and I am feeling 9. I am feeling very human, very present in my body right now.
Love it. Ryan, how about you, buddy?
Oh gosh, I wish I had such a positive answer, Jill. My name is Ryan Doze, and I just got done with, I think, an 11-hour workday, and I feel barely functional. So, like a 0.5, I'm going to drag myself through the rest of the day, and hopefully a good night's sleep will get me back to, like, my normal 4 or 5.
I love it. So 0.5, so you're not, like, completely non-human. There's still a glimmer of hope. By the end of this conversation, I'm hoping you'll feel more human.
Put it this way. The way I physically feel right now, I would put my consciousness into a different body to physically keep up with the rigors of the world. Sorry, Will. We're not ready to talk into our main topic yet.
Oh,
I will belay that.
Teaser. He's done some podcasts before. He knows how to tease. He knows how to tease that. Yeah, Leah, how about you?
Hey, yeah, I am Leah Robinson, resident geek theologian. I am not at Ryan's level, but I certainly am definitely not at Jill's level either. I'm probably like a 3-4. I've been on the computer all day doing like conference organization for AER Southeast. I know. Just when when you do just like monotonous work on a computer all day, and like people are like, touch grass. And I'm like, I probably really do need to go touch actual grass. you need to go roll in the grass.
Field debris. Where do you see that? Look at my lawn.
Like, you know, so I'm at probably a 3 or a 4, but I'm hoping this conversation will elevate me to like an 8.
Sure, that'd be great.
That's right. I love it. Well, hey folks, I'm Will Rose. I'm one of your hosts here at Seismic Ecology, one of your resident geekologists. And I think I'm at a 7.5. You know, earlier in the day, I felt like what it means to be human is to be busy and have too many plates spinning and not know where to put your attention and energy, then I'm full human at this point. But on election day, as we're doing this live on election day, you know, part of being human, let's gather, let's advocate, let's vote, let's uphold this democracy that we've been entrusted, all those things. So that's how I'm feeling today, and super stoked to geek out with you all. I do want to say, encourage you to rate and review the show. It really helps our algorithms. I want to big shout out and thank you to John Augustine, man. It was cool hanging with you at Theology Beer Camp. Thank you for your support of the show. He's gotten to comics lately. I even mailed him some comics today that he can read. Ryan, I sent him a graphic novel of The God Butcher. Yes, I did. He needs to read. Oh, that's how big of an evangelist I am.
Oh, good. Yeah. And so one hell of a gift giver, Will.
Yeah, yeah. Damn. I think I just went up from 7.5 as a human.
You've never given me a gift, Will.
Oh, well, yes, I did. We hung out in that influencer room at the Theology Beer Cup. That was a gift in and of itself. More stories of that later. More stories. All right, we got to stay on track. Here we go. You can get your own shout out for less than or, you know, at $5 or more a month. And so if you do that, one of the subscribers on Fourth Wall and be a part of our community, then yeah, you can get your own shout out and you can even get some merch. And I'm going to make sure that Leah gets a shirt because she talked about that earlier, that she wants a Seismic Ecology shirt. We're going to make sure that happens. We're going to make sure that happens. So let's hop over to the lightning round. Here we go.
Yeah.
Boom. There it is. And just kind of talk about things lately in the lightning round of like really fast, quick hits of what's new in pop culture. And I'm going to let Jill take the lead in this and go for it.
Happy to. It is November 3rd. What else is there to geek out on except the World Series and my world champion Dodgers? It has been such an exciting October. Games 6 and 7. Oh my gosh. I'm still on cloud 9. That's probably why I feel so human.
Nice.
Because Dave Roberts yesterday thanked all the fans. So I feel very responsible for this win that God. Yeah. So geeking out on that. And because, well, I need baseball because the world is heavy and I have needed levity in my entertainment. My husband and I just watched a movie, Splitsville. It's like a slapstick comedy sort of drama that just was ridiculous and absurd and had us like laughing out loud, which is exactly what we need in this moment.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah.
I'm not a big baseball fan, but man, I do like the World Series and this one did not disappoint. What a good one that was. Cool, cool, cool. Mm-hmm. Ryan, what lightning round? What's new with your pop culture consumption right now?
So the wife and I, we are watching a series that we knew was not going to be completed, but we've I've heard so much about it and it's The Wheel of Time. And we're on the final season that's been released, and I've had some mixed feelings on it. It's not the best. It's way too many characters, and there's no time travel, which is a kind of surprising. And but season one was great. Season two, the finale was a really good closing for the story, and this last season, it's all over the place. I don't know what's going on. Like, I don't know why things aren't happening. And but we are trying to get through it. See if we know if we'll like it.
Nice, 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 nice.
I think it's pretty clear by my outfit. the world is heavy. And, so I love college football. I actually missed the World Series cause I was watching college football. I'm a diehard Braves fan as well. So, and I promised myself because of being hurt that I would never support an LA team or a New York team. Being a Braves fan, the Toronto Blue Jays also have hurt me. It felt like I made the right choice there. But yay. Also, I've been catching up on some horror stuff because it's been spooky season. And I've been digging. Oh, I saw last night I watched Nope from Jordan Peele because I love Jordan Peele, but it was something that, yay, I did send it in time. That I hadn't seen this one, and it is so completely different, I will say, from the other two that I think he's done. He maybe has done more, but that's in my head. And a Rocky Horror Picture Show, which I am so desperate. I'm like making every, these pictures are great. I mean, good job. I mean that genuinely. That's a great picture. So I've been trying, it's the 50th anniversary, and I'm really, if I'm an evangelist at any level, it's for like media stuff. And so I've really been evangelizing Rocky Horror, to no avail, I will say so far. but I want to do some theology, and Rocky Horror stuff. So that's what I've been geeking out on.
Ah, love it. Love it. Love it.
So I, upon the encouragement of Leah Robinson and us talking about horror stuff throughout October, I binged Halloween, in the month of October for the first time. I've been a big kind of John Carpenter fan for a while because of his movie, The Thing. And I watched Halloween for the first time, and I was like, how have I never watched this movie? It's objectively awesome. And then my sister-in-law, who lives with us, she said, would you ever watch the Scream movie with me? And I'm like, do you mean like Matthew Lillard, Neve Campbell Scream? And she's like, sure, whoever those people are, because she's 19 and she doesn't care. So we watched Scream, and now we're on like the third Scream movie. So, yeah, I've been binging a lot of horror stuff, a lot of slasher stuff, and it's been weirdly fun to dig into these franchises. But also, I sit here not even 24 hours from my Milwaukee Bucks beating the Indiana Pacers for the first time this season, and I look forward to many, many more wins against our dreaded rivals from Indianapolis. I guess along with Leah, I also love college football. So I'm kind of waiting for my Iowa Hawkeyes to get their just absolute butts caved in by Oregon this weekend. I could have chosen a different way to say that, Leah, and I couldn't think of one off the top of my head.
Everyone gets their butts caved in once.
I mean, it's okay. I basically had a heart attack every game that we've played for the season. So, it's great and joy. It's why I'm happy for Jill, because the joy, yes, for is so intense, but like the disappointment, yeah, so low.
It makes the wins even better. Like I remember when the Bucks won the NBA championship 4 years ago, it was the best. I cried. It was so intense. And now I'm just like, if we could just like get to the Eastern Finals, that'd be awesome. But congratulations, Jill. That's a great feeling.
Thank you so much. It is. I mean, we've had a really good decade, but this one feels very sweet.
Mr. Ohtani doesn't hurt at this point.
Not at all. Not at all. Well, I think someone said earlier, it's a great time to be alive. Like, yes, we get to be alive in the time of Ryan Coogler, but also we're on the planet sometime as Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah. I love it.
Well, sure. Like, basketball season. I didn't put this in my initial like outline, but yeah, UNC basketball started. And I'm glad because our football team is not great, even though it's homecoming this week, but it is a good feeling when college basketball.
Is it a coach or something? Like
he did. Yeah. We got Kiana Handler.
So, doesn't he date on the younger side, Will?
Gosh, here comes the trolls. Let's switch to Frankenstein. Speaking of coaches that are too old, let's talk about Frankenstein. I saw Frankenstein in the theater. This is a Netflix, like show or movie made for Netflix, but then they put it in the theaters for like a week to see people, because you really need to see this on the big screen, but it's coming on Netflix. But you know, I like the the Frankenstein mythos and where, it, you know, 1818, Mary Shelley started the whole goth movement and maybe started sci-fi. I'm not sure if she started it all, but it's pretty close when it comes to this.
Yeah, that, as having the first horror novel, Mary Shelley is,
yeah,
they credit her with that.
Yeah. And I totally agree. And I really like this movie. I wouldn't say it's my favorite. They packed a lot into this movie. They tried to pack a lot in. It's a gorgeous movie. I don't know how much it adds to the Frankenstein mythos or what, or how it deepens it, but it's definitely an age old question that I think, again, what does it mean to be human? How do we relate to our creators, playing God, all those questions that novel lifted up that we keep going back to in movie form and show form and comic book form, all that is still there in this movie. And I really like it. So I would definitely, we'll talk about recommendations later, but you want to see this version for sure.
Guillermo del Toro.
Absolutely it is. Yeah, but it's got a Star Wars guy in there, Oscar Isaac. I was ready for him to hop in his Starfighter and fly away at the end, but that didn't happen. But maybe it happened later. Speak Star Wars.
Zachary into Star Wars.
It does. Star Wars Visions, the third season of their kind of anime mashup with Star Wars is really cool. I like what they're doing here. I don't know if they are experimenting to see who, like a trial and error, and who's going to get their own series or character. But I love what they're doing, just throwing spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. And there's a couple characters that could pop back up. But man, I really love this. I'm not a huge anime fan, but I do like cartoon and art and animation. And so for them to do this, I just give me a full series with the legacy characters and anime style, and I'm there. I think that's great. And then I saw Tron Ares. I had to go to the theater because I want to hear the music and I want to see light cycles. And, you know, Jared Leto, I don't, you know, jury's out whether I really like this dude or not as an actor. But if he's listening, you know, you do your craft, you do you. I was better. I was there at 82. I was alive. I played the video game. I liked Legacy in 2010. I liked this movie. Is it going to win Oscars? No. Does it add anything else to the question of what does it mean to be human or AI and tech? And I think Matrix probably did that question better. But I do like the Tron series, and one day hope to ride that light cycle at Disney World. Evan, you're in Florida. You go to Disney a lot. Have you ridden Tron roller coaster yet?
Imagine. Yes, I have. It is a great roller coaster. It's super cool, but it's so short.
That's the one I've heard.
Yeah, and thanks for reminding me, because I had something else I wanted to bring up, and it's about the theme parks anyway, about the Stolen Kingdom, this documentary about the German exploring at Walt Disney World, and the crazy story of how one of the Buzzy animatronics that got stolen, and the straight up a psychopath that held it hostage for like a year from the company. It's a bizarre story. And I saw a screening of it here in Orlando. And if you guys can find it, you guys should check this movie out. It's super wild and super niche, but it's
weird.
Yeah. What's the platform? Or where, is it like a documentary? Is it like it's on stream?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, it's from these YouTube guys that started doing the old abandoned malls and stuff like that, and now they're starting to write some more feature films.
Cool. Yeah, I'll put that on my radar.
I'm obsessed with the urban, is it called urban exploring or whatever? Some of that stuff is, like, they go into Chernobyl and stuff. Like, it's wild. Stuff. Yeah.
There you go. Love it. All right. That's the lightning round. Listen for it. There you go. Let's hop over to the main topic of the day, and that's Alien Earth. Yeah, is it brand new? Did it come out? The finale came out a while back, but I've been wanting to do this episode because I do like the Alien franchise. I do like the movies. I wouldn't say I'm like a super fan, but through Ryan and Leah and some of their work that they've done with the Algae Beer Camp, talking about these things, I've gotten more into it, and as I was challenged to watch Alien Earth. And I was, whenever it came out and dropped on the night that it came out, that was on the television for me. I wanted to see what happened next and where were they going to take these things. So I'm pretty excited about this. How how do we want to talk about this with five of us? I think what I want to do is start out with Leah and Ryan. Where is this stand in the canon, like the timeline? And then I'd like for us to go around. I know Evan's only seen a couple episodes, so he doesn't care about spoilers. We're going to keep doing this. But where does it, after we talk about like where it stands in the canon, what do we think about? I'm curious for Jill and myself and Evan, where does it add to the canon or take away from it? Does it water it down? Is it needed? I mean, nothing's really needed, but like in terms of not only where is the timeline, but where we think it falls in the canon. So Leah, Ryan, you guys talk it out. I invite you to be a part of this. You're the expert.
Yeah, it's so historically, I believe it's set before the 1970s, like the Alien. Mm-hmm. So timeline wise, it's really a prequel in a way to the original, the OG. It's interesting. We're going to dig into this later, like in terms of the canon. I mean, I think it fits like in terms of if we're talking about stuff we've already heard, like Waylon, Utonic is there, like we have that. The aliens behave much and such in the way that we've seen in other films. So I don't, you know, I'm thinking about whenever my husband's a big Star Wars guy, it always comes back to Star Wars.
Sure does.
And so anytime he says something like, well, that's not canon. Well, that's not canon, which is so funny for a theologian to hear, by the way. He's such a dork, but then so are we, right? I mean, like, absolutely. So I always think about that when I hear the word canon about aliens is like, is this falling into the same sort of world? Like, is something just strange? Like, you know, you're talking about Halloween, Ryan. It's like one of the Millennium ones or whatever.
The Rob Zombie ones or the, okay.
There's one that where Jamie Lee Curtis in the later ones, in the ones that have been made recently, makes fun of this film because it basically just like none of it makes sense in terms of the narrative. And she says someone made some fan fiction or something and did a movie about it. And so she plays on that. So I don't think this is doing that. Like this is not blowing the whole narrative up. Now you talked about later, is it adding to it or taking away? That part we can dig into, but that's my perspective, is I don't think it's setting fire to anything here. I think it's playing by the rules.
Yeah. Ryan, how about you?
No, it's definitely playing by the rules, but it's playing in a different corner of the universe than we're used to, because we're actually on Earth during all these events. Like the Nostromo, the ship in the first Alien movie, is out in deep space at this point. That's like, it's almost like it's going, it's a parallel side of, it's playing parallel themes and that with a universe just millions or thousands of miles away from the characters we're the most familiar with. I know we'll probably get into this later, Will, but my favorite episode of the entire show was when they do the episode where they do the plot of the first Alien movie, but in 40 minutes. Like that was an insanely good episode of just television, period. Because you got all of the classic Alien vibes, but ramped up to 11 and in a more condensed package. And I told Leah this before this show started. The thing I was the most concerned about was how it was going to pace an Alien story over multiple episodes, because it had never been done before. We hadn't done that. We hadn't seen that in Predator. We hadn't seen that in Alien. And now we're at this point where we get an overabundance of media with both franchises right now. Yeah. And the TV show was the one thing I was the most worried about just because of the pacing. And I think they actually nailed it. I'm sure we'll talk about the finale. The finale was the one thing I had like a slight issue with.
Yeah. I think the episode you're talking about is In Space, No One, episode 5.
Yeah.
The fact that they even shortened the catchphrase for it seems pretty fun too. Yeah, I'm with you. I watched the first episode. I think I'm just going to watch the first episode to see what the vibe is and see what it does. It feel, does it have the feel of Alien and Aliens, the movie? And I was like 5 minutes in, I'm like, yep, it sure does. And that's what kind of locked me in for the rest. Jill, like for you, what's I don't know your history with the Alien franchise. You have a history before this TV show and then lead up to TV show, where you think this fits in terms of canon and how that holds up for you.
Yeah. So I actually started with this show. I heard someone on this podcast talking about it and I was like, all right, I guess I got to check it out. And my husband's huge sci-fi guy. So we watched it and then I said, well, now I need to watch the movie.
Oh, so I almost like in order I watched. And I think the only like thing that maybe isn't canon or I just heard. So I work in a barbershop. I didn't say that earlier. So I get to hear people talking about pop culture all the time. And one of the things that came up is there's a couple guys that said they didn't like the show and how it treats canon because it ignores some of the origins from like Prometheus and Alien Covenant. That like they give an origin for how the aliens came to be and then this TV show kind of ignores it. I don't know because I'm not in that world yet. I've just started. But I do think something that Ryan said earlier about, I think it was Ryan, about the show taking place on Earth and how that already is like so disorienting because we're used to seeing it in deep space. I think it really speaks to the moment that we're in now, that like the horror is no longer out there. It's right here on our doorstep and we have to deal with it like right now.
Yeah, I agree with you because that the space episode, weirdly, because Ryan and I usually are parallel, it was my least favorite of the season. Yeah.
Tell me more. Unpack that a little bit.
Because I think it's exactly what Jill said is that the horror was on Earth. You know, the horror was here. It is here. And I think based on where my brain was at, as soon as they took it, and I understood what they were doing, and I'm not saying it wasn't important. They were saying it's still a part of this world. This is what happened. Like it's still in space, you know, but as soon as they dissed or unearthed it, it became something that was out there. And I was like, oh, I mean, it was great. And I agree with Ryan about the parallel between showing that in the original Alien in a 40 minute thing. So it gave it a little bit of an origin story and connected it to the OG films. But like, I just watched it and maybe it was because I've already seen the OG film, but I just was kind of like, no, come back down here. This is where I want to be. So I think for me, it took me out of the story a little bit. I think if they'd done it maybe at the beginning, I would have less of an issue because it would be more of a timeline, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I think I'm with you guys. Like I wanted the vibe of the original movies. I feel like I got that. And then I like what you're saying. It's not like in space, no one can hear you scream. It's like on Earth, everyone can hear you scream because we have aliens running around everywhere. And what does that mean that this seed is planted? If the engineers planted life on Earth in one of the prequels, then how are these aliens going to plant the seed of horror or this race to be like God, to create life? This isn't a Frankenstein movie where they're creating monsters, but they kind of want to, they're going to play around with that a little bit. But then you have like the AI and the tech and the whole Lost Boys and Peter Pan and Wendy and the synthetics and the hybrids and placing consciousness from sick kids into robots. Just right alongside, we want these aliens because we want to do experiments to create the perfect weapon or hybrid with those or create eternal life, whatever that is. I think all that together really kind of held up for me as I watched the show. It was intriguing to me. Now I do, as it gets to the end, yeah, my nitpick too, along with Ryan maybe, is that like, I felt it was like a setup for another season. I don't know if we did have any like closure. They kind of slowed the pace down a little bit because they're like, oh, well, maybe we'll have a season two and don't know when that's going to come out. I really want to see some closure or something else there with like you would with like a movie. And that's my annoyance with movies too. If they end on a cliffhanger, where are we going to get a second movie? Is that happening? I don't know. But anyway, that's all these things apart on Earth with the trillionaires who are running everything and then experimenting on consciousness and humans.
and with these aliens running around that are out there minding their own business, but we're going to co-opt them and bring them down to Earth to see what we can do with them is pretty scary. So I know I say a lot there, but I know anybody else wants to unpack that a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was set very much setting up for this. I think the pacing, you talked about pacing, Ryan, and I don't know that they nailed the pacing, especially at the end. Like, I found myself being like, okay, this is, come on, you know, and I love a good, like, I have, like I said, I have a PhD. I'm used to being bored. So it's like, I don't have a really high tolerance for boredom, but like, at the end, I kind of was like, all right, we get it. Like, I felt like it needed to move a little bit quicker at the end. You know, we get it. The bad guys are bad. The kid genius is psychotic. Humans are the worst. They are the new alien. Like, who's worse, the alien or the humans? I think what we see in this story is the humans are worse. I actually do take your point, Jill, about the origin stuff. I don't know that they're giving credit to Ridley Scott's prequels in this. It hasn't come up perhaps yet, because no one's dug into where these things came from necessarily, other than a ship from space. But I'll be interested to see if it references canon in that way.
Yeah. And don't you think, like, you're asking who's worse, the humans or the aliens, right? But it's kind of like, you get that the aliens are a mirror of us in this, more so than the movie, right? Because I only have those two to compare. That's like, oh, well, they have this power to procreate in, like, you know, strange ways, attaching to someone's face and then popping out of their body. But they're just mirroring all of this crazy tech that's happening, you know, on Earth with these corporations and us creating life, sort of human life, sort of hybrid life, but exploiting all of it and destroying all of it.
Mm.
Yeah, and that picture makes me, I agree with you so much. That picture makes me feel so much, because that, I forgot her name, but the ginger girl, when they wipe her memory and they're just manipulating them, I'm like,
yeah,
we're just doing it to each other now. Like, the stuff that we yell at the alien, because the aliens take over our bodies, mm-hmm. and make us different things. And it's like, but we're doing that too, you know?
That actress was so good. She's a fury.
Yeah. Yeah. What, how do you think that play around with the Peter Pan, Wendy, Lost Boys, that theme of what do you think they're doing there with this? I do find it fascinating, Jill, that you watch this first and then watch the others. So seeing this as your first experience with, everybody has their back of Star Wars, first Star Wars experience, then they watch the others. And then this, these fandoms that, and franchise have been around a long time. You have your entry point, and your jumping on point. Then you have like a whole learning curve of what else is out there for that. But in terms of having it as a backdrop of Peter Pan and immortality, not growing up or being kids, but also, I don't know, that was intriguing to me too. I love the soundtrack, man. The soundtrack, the intro teaser at the beginning, how I thought it was directed and shaped really well. But what do you guys think about, like, this whole Peter Pan thing?
Yeah, I'll just jump in. So one of the things that bothers me a lot in movies is when adults play children and they over-dramatize how children behave. And especially when you think about that these kids were dying, right? They all had terminal illnesses, which there's a little bit of maturity that comes from that.
Hmm.
So I actually felt like I didn't like the way that the children, when they had these adult bodies, like, couldn't step into adulthood. It's almost like they made them too childish and too immature in the way that it was acted. That was bothersome to me. But I just love the whole theme of the Peter Pan and how, what did they say about boy genius? Like, he wasn't Peter. He's actually...
Did they say
Now he's a pirate.
Was he captain?
But he's a Captain Hook.
He's not the boy that didn't grow up who's trying to like make these friends around him. He's actually the evil one.
Mm. Yep.
Well, it's the point when they realize that he's not actually in it for them. He's not in it to help a dying child to live. Like, essentially, he's in it to see how far he can go in playing God, essentially.
Right. And I think they only took the dying children because ethically, the children were going to die anyway. So it wasn't like they were saving them. They're just keeping, told their families they were dead. Yeah, they're just experimenting and exploiting these children who would have already died.
And the idea is the end result is I don't know if you remember, but that he's going to charge an insane amount of money for people to do. So you're exploiting the sadness of folks to make money. So he is the villain. I mean, he's not the only villain, but he's one of them.
Yeah. And with Hurt Wendy connecting back with her brother, bringing him back in and having them connection to see what's left of her, what she is, what she used to be, what she is now. Seeing her different body, but seeing her mind, that being there. Evan reminded me that he was also, this goes back to Star Wars, he was also a character in Andor. And he wrote that, like, the manifesto, right? Didn't he write the manifesto? Yeah, that did all that. But then again, like this, seeing this or talking about this after seeing Frankenstein so much or seeing it so recently, that parallel of what it means to be human or the monster playing God really, really does is that age old question that just won't ever go away. Whether you're Mary Shelley and in the 1800s writing about this or here the alien. The original movie was like this horror film, aliens, what are we doing? But you had some tech there. But here they're really grounding it to Earth to talk about, again, this transhumanism. You see one of the guys has like some tech. But he's still human. He's not downloaded consciousness into a robot, but he has like a robot tech arm, right? From when he was little or accident that happened. You guys could remind me of that. But the whole idea of transhumanism, what does it mean to be human? What are we doing? And as Jill said, this holding up a mirror to help us explore that with each other, I think does a good job with it. I really enjoy it. So to hear your guys' thoughts on that and whether that answered that or it helped us, it's not going to answer the question, but it's going to press us to wrestle with it. Ryan, do you think that parallels to Frankenstein or that age old question was immediately human along with the transhumanism links up, matches up?
I think your enjoyment of this series will really depend on what previous alien media you really enjoyed, because Leah knows this very well. Like, Ridley Scott's movies are kind of high concept, like Prometheus and Alien Covenant, very high concept. The original Alien movie is pretty stripped back and pretty simple. It's a slowly zeroing in and isolating one person to find out what do they do when basically the fear of the unknown comes right up to you and there's no one else there to save you. It's I'm a big fan of the subgenre of cosmic horror. I read the first Alien movie as a cosmic horror because the xenomorph is unavoidable for Sigourney Weaver at the end, which is probably why I enjoyed that episode of them recreating a lot of the beats of the first Alien movie. Because I mean, Leah and I talk about this way too much, so I won't bore anybody. I can share a link to a panel we did 2 years ago.
Yeah, please, anyone's just the show notes.
But like, the first Alien movie is kind of simple. But Ridley Scott's stuff is when he basically tries to retell a creation story. But that's pretty high concept. And Alien Earth, I feel like at certain points, Alien Earth tried to be so high concept that it kind of forgot the really cool, gritty, down to like just the core, raw fear and isolation. Because there's this whole complex of people. I remember talking to Will about this after the third or fourth episode. I'm like, I'm gonna need the body count to go up. Like, there's a lot of people just hanging around, and if I know one thing about the Xenon, kind of doesn't switch around a lot. Like, you get halfway through the movie and then the back half people start dropping. So I was like, I need the body count to go up because I want to be afraid of Xenomorph. I'm not supposed to like him or root for him. And that's where Will and I kind of discovered our breakout character of the show. It was the little eyeball guy. Having a monster inside of the alien universe that's not the Xenomorph, that I'm actually more afraid of than the classic alien, was insane to me. I did not see that coming. That little eyeball monster is more terrifying than the scene with the goat. I was like, oh gosh, there's my nightmare. So I loved when they were trying to answer those high concept questions, but at times I was like, okay, I need more of the nitty gritty. Luckily they gave us that, but then we're gonna come back to the ending, guys. Like, the ending kind of felt like we kind of like ground to a halt. It was like, okay, what do we do now? I don't know where we're going with this now. It felt like less of a cliffhanger and more of like a, this is where we leave you for now. And I feel like, okay, that's where I've been left for now. I guess get ready for Predator Badlands now.
Will sent me a message. This is a separate anecdote that just said, I need to know what your thoughts are on the goat. And with no other context. And I hadn't seen the episode yet. So I was like, did Will have a stroke? Will just, I was like, what is he talking about? Because it just literally just said, I need to know your thoughts about the goat. That was like,
who's the greatest of all?
The greatest of all five?
And Zor.
Ryan, Michael Jordan, is that what we're talking? Kelly Slater, the best surfer ever? Who are we talking about? Tiger Woods? Who are we talking about?
Want to have this fight now.
I know, that's right. You know, I'm just pushing buttons. But Lee, I'll say, what did you think of the goat? When you watched it, now you can answer that question. I did not have a scar. It was a legit question.
Well, no, I can tell you what I think about the goat now that I have a context for it. I'm interested because it's, so that, I did look it up. That alien doesn't exist. Speaking of canon, doesn't exist in the canon. It was created by the guy that I can't remember who's the director of the series?
Noah Wiley.
There you go. Him. I think he, good job. He created that. I'm wondering if it's not maybe a, did you get the impression that it was maybe a good guy? Good character in the eyeball character?
I did not get that impression.
I don't know.
I am bitter. I didn't get that impression at all. I got evil mastermind vibes from it.
Maybe it's just surrounded by such terrible people that it became a good player in my mind. There were moments where it felt like the eyeball was trying to like warn, maybe, or maybe manipulate. We'll see. The thin line between warning and manipulating. So I think it's terrifying. Is it as terrifying as the Xenomorph? I mean, they gave it a lot more screen time, I think, than the Xenomorph.
Yeah, that's true.
And I like the high concept stuff. So when the Xenomorph started, you know, just murdering people, like just like taking out a whole like a platoon of people, I was like, okay, let's. Because what I do like, because I think they didn't use the Xenomorph as well as they could. Like, Xenomorph is scary in those moments where it's dark and it's around the corner and you're being stalked and it's like, but just to see in broad daylight the Xenomorph go out and just kill a bunch of people with guns, you're like,
on an island, yeah,
it's like, okay,
showing a little too much. I will, like, even though Ryan like wanted some body count, I am thankful they didn't kill off. Was the alien's name is like Oculus or something like that? Ocellus. How do you pronounce that? PhD person. What is it? Oculus? There you go. All right. So Oculus.
Steve.
You know, the eye octopus is what
I got a PhD in how to talk. I'm from Georgia.
So PhD first.
Yeah, that's nice. But I, the fact that they survived, this alien survived at the end and possessed a somewhat dead body and walked away, that they're still hanging out in the universe, that they're still out there. So this reanimation, again, Frankenstein.
Glass to warm her.
I know. These kids that the lore, right?
But he's with Ryan. I may be convinced.
You wait till that second season when that eyeball comes out and it's like all benevolent. And
eat Darling's body. There's a reason.
Yeah, and the eyeball is what killed that other lost boy. Like, because the goat knocked on the glass and it knew exactly what was going on.
Warning about the beehive.
Let's shut the door and see what happens with that crazy fly.
Y'all are probably right. I don't know why in that moment I maybe needed to like humanify it and to make it have human emotions. They just. I'm the beehive, says Ryan.
True.
It'll forge you into your outrage. Yeah? Eyeball tactics.
I do have a question for y'all about the scents. Why do you think they were made so fallible? Like, why do they bleed? They have this like white, you know, ooze that comes out and their bodies can be broken. But the whole point is to like create this indestructible body, but they were not indestructible. They actually went down pretty easy. The two or three that went down.
Great question.
I think this is what I'm 0 for 1 right now. So this is my thought on it. I think they were really focused on the brain aspect of those machines, if you want to call them that. And maybe to some degree the personality, because we see throughout the movies, especially in the beginning ones, that the sense actually change, their personalities shift, which is something they didn't take into account happening. But I think it was they wanted to see what they could do with the mainframe, if you will, the brain. And then, like, I feel like the body was almost the secondary thing, because essentially, I mean, they can get put back together. They usually do. At one stage, if you remember, Ryan, it's just the head of Michael Fassbender that exists. Just the head. He still came back somehow. So I think they were more concerned about sort of the hardwiring of the brain than the other bits.
Well, in alien movies, there are very few full synths that don't go bad. Like in the first movie, obviously Ian Holm goes bad like towards the end, and I would argue he's the actual bad guy. David, Michael Fassbender's character in Ridley Scott's prequel trilogy kind of sort of thing that happened. Like David is a sympathetic character in the first movie, and then he is much more diabolical in the second one, but he has this like God complex justification for it. That if someone created him,
full and diabolical,
you forget. Yes. But then, like, if you've seen Alien Romulus, the synth that's in that movie is incredibly endearing and sticks up for Rain the entire time. Like the way they reinterpret the synth in the full synthetic persons in these movies is kind of crazy, because they just ascribe like a. Almost like a D&D alignment to them. What I find interesting about the hybrids is you take that childishness of the soul and their experience with the world, it's something inside of a weapon. And it's like, there's no, I like what Jill said earlier, like the factor of maturity, it was so crazy watching these adults play these children. We're so interesting. Everyone is kind of well adjusted.
Right.
Like one of the girls believes she's going to have a child at some point. And I turned to whoever I was watching with, I was like, that will not end well. I guarantee you. Because like they're gonna come up with a human want or desire that is in her heart, or she sees something and is jealous of what another person has. That human desire is going to be confronted with her artificial body, and that is going to lead to some very conflicting thoughts and actions. Like the hybrids, the synths are very different. And there's that other character of the cyborg. We get three different kinds of integration with technology
And I am by no means a technologist, or whatever the PhD version of that word would be. I felt the cyborg character was my favorite because he is completely human with an artificial attachment that gets him judged a lot throughout the show, but he's also he's fully a man, but he has a piece of technology integrated with his body, and he almost gets more judgment than the rest of all of them.
Well, because he's fully a jerk.
Well, yes, there is that part.
And they're like, oh, this gives you like 5 seconds of a backstory where your child died, and it's like, okay, let's not kill everybody because you had a bad day with the kid.
But he was also lured. But wasn't he also lured because of like the money and the trillionaire and being on like the job and like that whole like
your body completely uses him
to justify it though with like the scenes on the beach. Do we even know what happened to the kid? I don't even know if the kid died. I don't think so.
I think he just left for so many years, right? Because when he was in space, it was like,
no.
That is a consequence of living in the alien universe. People die when you live hundreds of years.
Yeah. And there was the best scene between the cyborg, Moro. Is his name Moro? Yeah.
Sorry.
And the brother, Joe. And he's asking Joe, like, how does it feel to have that lung? Because, you know, he's technically a cyborg too, right? Because he's like part machine, part man. And I don't remember exactly the line, but it's like, what, now that you have a piece of the corporation that has saved your life, what is it going to cost you? And he answers everything. So good, right? Everything. I mean, I know this is a broad stroke, but I honestly was like, what does the convenience of using Amazon cost me? What does the convenience of typing in my questions to AI to get a better, you know, email sent?
Absolutely. Like,
freaking everything.
Yeah.
Probably.
Yeah.
And I think Ryan's right. I think the people who like this series will be kind of the same people that, like, if it keeps going the way that it's going, are the same people that like kind of the lore and the background of Ridley Scott's version of Aliens. Because this is building, it's world building. Like
yeah.
You're right. In the original Alien with Sigourney Weaver, you don't get a lot of world building. Like, I remember when I first watched it and they kept talking about Mother, and I was like, why are they calling the computer Mother? And like, it makes total sense now. But like, the world building wasn't quite as intense in that one. It was kind of a horror film. That was scary space horror film, as Ryan said. And so I can see the world building that they're trying to do. I don't know that some of the points are getting a little belabored at this stage, which is kind of why I thought the pacing was slow, in my opinion. But also, I think the eye is okay. So.
Well, I just want to piggyback on what Leah said there, because I wanted to make this point earlier, and I was messing with this dumb audio thing. One thing I think Alien Earth did, and Noah Hawley got sold. It was an Alien TV show. Thank you. FX gave us the Alien TV show. Awesome. It was overstuffed at points. Like, and it weirdly overstuffed and belabored. It was like, okay, can we move along a little bit? Like, but I want to know more about Morrow's character. I want to know more about Timothy Oliphant's character. Like the boy genius. Like, I want to see him have some comeuppance. Those things. And maybe we have season two to look forward to. But also, to piggyback on another thing Leah said, if you enjoy this series, go watch your Ridley Scott films. If you're looking for a little bit more intensity, faster pace, you were never going to get that in an episodic show. Like, that wasn't going to happen because of the pacing that we've already referenced. But go watch Alien Romulus, because that thing is a roller coaster that doesn't let you go. And Fede Alvarez is like the king of reinventing old, like, 80s horror stuff for a modern, you know, for a modern viewer, having that like respect of the genre and of its themes. But Alien Romulus was.
Romulus was like Ridley Scott in the original had a baby.
Ridley Scott was a producer on Alien Romulus.
He produced it, and then he gave it to this horror guy and said, let's do it. And it shows. to me.
Evan and Jill, were you able to watch Romulus? Have you got, was that in your bandwidth? Not yet.
We're gonna. It is as the dog.
Easy.
All right. Yeah, I watched the beginning and then didn't finish just because life got ahead. But it's definitely on my list. I need to focus in on.
It's good as a standalone. I think, like, you know, you could watch it as a standalone.
Nice.
Yeah, it's not a lore. It's not a lore heavy movie. It's just an adventure. To borrow something Will and I talk about a lot, it's a one shot.
There you go.
You know what the Xenomorph looks like? That's all you really need to know.
Well, like, in terms of any last things, if there's something about this, Jill, Evan, others, like, something that, you know, if you go to bed tonight, you're like, man, I wish I said this about Alien Earth. Why didn't I say this? You could always chime in the comments. You could always follow all those things. There's my church phone. I don't know who's calling at 5:30 at night, but anyway. Anything there that you want to make sure we discuss or themes that we don't want to lose?
I don't like that she can talk to aliens.
Oh, you don't like it that Wendy.
I talked about that our horror thing. As soon as a horror villain becomes something you can control, it loses its scariness. And so that's the final point I just want to put out, is I don't like that she can call it like a dog, like my dog. Then it just comes and kills everybody but her. It's not my favorite, but that's all. Mm-hmm.
It's a lot like that theme of control and hubris and superiority is like, you know, Boy Genius thinks he can control these hybrids that he made. They're not going to be controlled. She might think she can control that alien, but actually I don't think she does. Like, she talks to him and then she says, I think that's what I said. So it's like,
I think it hasn't murdered her yet, but
it's right. Yet. That is power. And can you control the power? But probably not. Cool theme.
Yeah. I like that too. And as Ryan was talking about, like, putting these children inside these bodies that are like super strong or superhuman and have like a superpower to, like, What are you going to do with that strength? What are you going to do with that power? What are you going to do with that? I think, again, the it hits close to home to Earth in terms of what we're wrestling with now, but in terms of what you do with power and influence and your money, do you keep these corporations keep accumulating, consuming other beings and things so they can get more and more money and then power and control? And what does the humans or those who have their feet in the grass or who are just medics trying to help people that are injured. They're the ones who are victimized, the ones who are kind of caught between it all. It was interesting that one alien scene where they're just killing everybody in that like party. Maybe it was a Great Gatsby party. I don't know if it was or not, but like, and
so one of my favorite scenes in the whole,
but like just murdered everybody. And so you're kind of like, okay, maybe they deserve, but who you're pulling for, who you're rooting for in these movies, of course, I'm pulling for Sigourney Weaver, the final girl. I'm pulling for the them to win, not the aliens, but could this ever come back around where Leah's going to pull for the Xenomorph? Or maybe, she's already pulling for Oculus, so, well, no.
Oculus.
So who knows?
Barnes on the Xenomorph too, right?
Oh my God.
Well, you mentioned the one thing I just wanted to add in at the end. I actually don't think Wendy's the final girl.
Oh, no.
I think Brother Joe is the final girl, which is why I was really happy to see him not die at the end of the season. Because I was like, if you really wanted to stab me right in the heart, you would kill off the one character that's just a good dude. And usually, Lee and I have seen our fair share of horror movies at this point. The good guy always dies. Like, if he's too good, if he's got too good of a heart and he wants to help people and fix babies and all that kind of stuff, he dies. He definitely dies. So I'm kind of just like holding my breath, but hoping that Joe is our final girl.
Nice. I like it. Cool, cool, cool. Well, all right. As we do this wrap up, what we like to do at the end of what's news, of all the things we talked about, the things we've seen lately, even Alien Earth, do we have a recommendation? Choose one that we talked about. What would you recommend to our listeners out there to go dive into? Ryan, go first. I know you have to bounce here in a second.
Yeah. Maybe this is just like what I've been consuming in terms of media, but if you want to get into the higher themes of Alien Earth, a movie I always go back to is Alex Garland's movie Annihilation.
I love that movie. And it deals with so many different themes that are both high concept, and it's not an overly raw like action movie. If you want the action of an alien movie, go watch John Carpenter's The Thing. Why are we even like, we shouldn't be discussing that. That shouldn't be a recommendation no one's ever heard. But if you're hearing that for the first time, you haven't seen that movie, go. And it's got ambiguity at the end too. Both those movies do well with ambiguity. The Alien franchise is good with ambiguity. I think those are both two good recommendations. I would recommend to anybody in any context, but especially in a context where we're talking about the Alien franchise.
Nice. Love it. Evan, what do you recommend, buddy?
What comes to mind when I was hearing you guys talk about it, and I was remembering that that Ridley Scott didn't do the second one, and the second original film, and it was James Cameron, and I remember how that one changed its tone and the differences in that. So I say to go see that movie and to just enjoy the different flavors that we have now of this franchise. So it's a pretty cool that we have a solid TV show now.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, with these big franchises been around a long time, they it is like jumping on point to lots of flavors. I think you're right, and there's some of might be your taste. You might like that flavor, or you might be like, huh, I'm gonna go back to what I like over here, but trying new things is always.
And Ridley Scott just hijacked the whole canon and was like, well, I'm going to tell you what is actually right about this. You know, it's like all of these. And then it would be like the prequels in Star Wars are the only thing that are considered canon, which would damper us. Right. Right. He kind of hijacked it in a way and was like, well, now if it doesn't fit that narrative.
Like it. Jill, what are you recommending?
This recommendation is for myself too. It is the Predator show, is it Badlands?
Yeah.
And I've heard that they will at some point meet up. Very excited about that.
Oh, really? That sounds fun.
Yeah, I didn't hear that. That is awesome.
That's fun.
Coming full circle. Leah, what are you recommending?
Yeah, well, I figured out in the beginning what that awful movie was that they made fun of in the Halloween series, which is H2O, which is such a millennial. I thought it was Halloween millennial, but it's the same ridiculousness that was happening at the time. Like Halloween X or whatever. Right. If you want a ridiculous movie, go watch that. But the one that I really would recommend is the brother in this show. And y'all know I'm terrible with names. Brother to Wendy. Do y'all remember what his name is?
It's Joe, isn't it?
Joe. Okay, Joe. Yep. So Joe is in a show that's, I think it's on Netflix, but it's called End of the Effing World. And I think it actually is Effing World. It is completely outside of horror. It's an indie flick. It's a weird sort of like journey flick. When he came on the screen, I was like, why do I have an intense feeling of crush on this human? And I said it to my husband, which made for a fantastic conversation.
What's it called?
And it's because of this film. It is a little indie film that could, and it's, the characters are great in it. And it's got all the triggers. So just prepare yourself for that.
It's called End of the Effing World?
End of the Effing World, yeah. And it's about this weird guy, played by Joe, who meets an equally weird girl, and they kind of run away together and things happen. But it's got a great soundtrack. Like if you're in like this sort of independent film world, it's a 10 out of 10.
Nice. Cool. My recommendation, since I'm feeling more human, I've moved up from 7.5 to 8.5, is to find yourself an old school arcade and play the cabinet version of Tron and see if you can get past level 3. I can't. I can get through 1 and 2 pretty easy. Level 3, I can't. So if you can get through level 3, please reach out to me and teach me how to get that. I can usually get high score because nobody else can either. But I don't know. That's what I'm going to do. So all these franchises are fun. I love it. They're going to keep going. There's going to be no shortage of geek content. in the world to come. That's why we'll be around forever. Systematic Geek College, we're going to help you work through these things and process all there is when it comes to the stuff we geek out on. And I really...
If all comes back and it's a good guy, I will like...
We'll see, like, yes, right. That's right. Take that, y'all. That guy stood up and walked away. It was the scientist's husband, right? Who, like, justification.
The eyeball brought back to life for a reason.
That's right. Mm-hmm. He's going to help the children who...
We'll see.
Well, Jill's got to go. Thanks, y'all. I'm going to have this outgoing music here and just say thank you for your support. Like, subscribe, share with your friends. Thank you for support, John Augustine. Thank you so much. There's another... Aaron Hardy.
What? All
here. Maybe some other names out there that say break the fourth wall. And say, yeah, thank you, Kevin. Try me another comment. And I'll put the full call. Subscribe. You can find all our stuff there. The episodes. All the stuff is there. I'm really happy that we're at fourth wall. It looks pretty cool. And yeah, I hope you all feel more human after listening to this or watching this on YouTube. And just know that we are the Priests of Geeks, and we're here for you. When you feel like a human or you feel less, you're not alone.
Hey guys, Christian here. Have you ever wondered how you can support Systematic Ecology? Well, we've made it a lot easier for you by going to Fourth Wall. Instead of what we've done in the past, Fourth Wall makes everything very easy for everyone involved. Everything is in the same spot. So if you want to find a way to become a member and get access to our exclusive memberships and all the giveaways that we're going to be doing, Fourth Wall is the way to go. As well, if you want to see all the extra episodes and content that we only put to our members, that's the best way to go. Feel free to rate and review us there. You can also leave a donation or tip if that's something you're interested in. And as well, you can help support our All Reading Counts initiative that we do. All the donations that go to that go to our libraries. You also, if you really want to, it's like, man, I really want to hear more episodes about Christian for some reason, or even for even reasons I don't understand, you want to hear Joshua more often. We have episodes listed by host, and you can see everyone there. If you have a favorite host, head that way and support the episodes that they're on. You also find a link to our YouTube page. And we may be adding some special content beyond what we've promised. Everything that was once in multiple different locations and you didn't know where to go, well, it's all in that one convenient place. If you want to know exactly where to go, the link to this will be in the description below.
Hi, friends. It's Laura here. And I just wanted to say thank you for listening to our show. Systematic Geekology is a part of a larger podcast network called the Anazal Podcast Network. Dummy for Theology is Joshua Noel's show discussing different theological topics from various perspectives and attempting to give people more questions than answers. My Seminary Life is Brandon Knight's show. It started as him going through what he was learning in seminary, and after he graduated, he's been doing independent studies and has a lot of fun series like on hermeneutics, Bonhoeffer Summer, and worship. And then Friday Night Frights is a monthly show with Christian Ashley and Joe Day. They have a vote on the Systematic Geekology Facebook group to choose a topic each month and discuss everything from cryptos to ghosts to aliens to serial killers and more. So we hope you'll give it a listen, and thanks for being part of what we're putting out there.